Jackie Baldurais remembers Brian Dennehy as the friend she talked to every day. She remembers when he was arrested at an excessively noisy show, and people were contributing 20s to help bail him out of jail. She remembers how he used to discipline his dog Stout with timeouts, warning people not to pet him when he was sent to sit in a corner. She doesn't remember the moment he was killed. She remembers fighting to pull apart a circle of people kicking at Brian, who was curled up in a ball at their feet. Then there's a blank, and suddenly she's standing in a completely different spot. She heard her friend Christy scream, looked up, saw a car, and saw Brian's face. An ambulance showed up and paramedics moved everyone back. They surrounded Brian, but just stood there, looking, she says. She asked, "Why are you not doing anything? Is he okay?" The fireman answered, "No," and she just fell to the ground. On December 6, 1997, John King, then a self-described gutter punk, smashed out the window of a Cadillac driven by Tecosa High Junior Varsity football player Dustin Camp. Camp had tried to run him over after an altercation late that Saturday night, says King. He thought it was just one more close call in Amarillo, Texas, where being a punk could mean being a target. King and his friends were used to being spit on, yelled at, chased, and sometimes beaten. Previously, Brian Dennehy had been taken to the emergency room after attacks by pickup trucks full of assailants. "If you look different in this town, you don't hardly have to leave your house to get fucked with," says King. "It'll definitely come to you." Just a week after their previous run-in on Friday, December 12th, King and eight friends, all kids involved in the Amarillo punk scene, found themselves facing Dustin Camp, his Cadillac, and a deserted shopping mall parking lot full of local high school students. The punks said they hadn't come to fight, that they went to eat at the International House of Pancakes across the street, because in the middle of the night in Amarillo, Texas, there's nothing else to do. Camp and his fellow students testified they hadn't come to fight either, but within minutes, the police were called to break up a pitched battle between the two groups. By the time they arrived, Brian Dennehy was dead and Dustin Camp was speeding home. The police found blood on his Cadillac and Dustin Camp was charged with murdering Brian Dennehy. First, Camp said his car skidded on some ice and that he didn't mean to do it. But when he took the stand in a courtroom a year and a half later, he said he was trying to save a friend from being beaten to death by Brian Dennehy. He was a violent individual and it took violence on Dustin Camp's part to put out an end to further violence and to save an innocent life, said Warren Clark, Camp's attorney. You could even argue that he was destined to die the way he did. After 13 days of testimony, the jury found Dustin Camp guilty of manslaughter, not murder, and sentenced him to 10 years probation on September 1, 1999. Clark told the local newspaper that he felt the jury had done the right thing. "We hung our heads," says Dave True, a friend of both Dennehy brothers. "Legally, they had murdered us." "We went to the IHOP every night, because there ain't shit else to do in this town," John King says. "We'd just drink coffee all night and hang out." It was Saturday, December 6th. Several tables down from King and his friend Chris Oles sat Dustin Camp, his date Phyllis Rieff, and a group of Tecosa High students, decked out in formal dress after an evening out at the Crystal Ball dance. Oles walked past them on the way to the restroom, 6 feet of spikes, mascara, and a lovingly hand-painted leather jacket. He felt them watching him, he says. "I'd never seen him before in my life, that I knew of. I thought they were going to ask me a question," he says. They did. "What the fuck are you looking at, faggot?" That week at IHOP had been particularly trying, Oles said later. Every night so far, someone had bounced an insult in his direction. By Saturday night, he was tired of it. "If it was just you and me, and you didn't have all your friends with you, you wouldn't say that," he said. At trial, Camp and his friends told a different story, with Phyllis Rieff testifying that Chris Oles had provoked them and flashed a knife. Oles denies having a knife, and says that as he slid back into the booth with King, the Tecosa kids flipped them off and kept cursing at them. Oles blew kisses and winked back, then got up to take a phone call at the front. Camp and his friend stood and followed. King met them as they gathered before Oles and the yelling started. Camp poked King in the chest, King says, and King shoved him back. In response, Potter County Deputy Sheriff Jerry Jackson, charged with keeping an eye on IHOP's rowdier clientele, hustled Camp's party out the door. "We'll be waiting across the street," they shouted, Oles and King remember. "We're gonna kick your ass." Inside, Oles called a friend, Kendra Petit, and told her, "You better come and get us, we're gonna get jumped." Someone got Jason and Brian Dennehy from a nearby Denny's. Kendra Petit, Jessica Jackson, and Brady Clark met them outside IHOP. Parked across the street in the deserted Western Plaza Mall parking lot were at least two cars, Dustin Camp's and Tecosa student Brian Kelly's. King and Brian ran across the street to confront them, King says, followed by their friends. Camp testified that there were six or seven people surrounding his car. Deputy Jackson across the street called the police when he saw 14 or 15 punks and a group of people approaching them from parked pickup trucks. Brian went up to Kelly's truck, told him to leave because he wasn't part of this, says King. Kelly promptly left. Then King and Brian approached Camp, who was sitting in his suit in his mother's Cadillac. He had borrowed the car for his date that night, Camp testified later. Camp locked the doors and wouldn't look at him, King says. You have a problem? King demanded. Why don't you get out of your car if you have a fucking problem? After a second of silence, Camp started his car and aimed it at the punks. He was driving through guys, trying to run them over, says Olays. On the phone with the police, Deputy Jackson saw a Cadillac heading for a cluster of punks. Camp later testified that the punks were latched onto his car and trying to block his escape. He denied trying to run anyone over that night. As Camp sped by, the punks jumped out of the way and King smashed a retractable police baton he frequently carried onto the front windshield. The glass cracked in Camp's car, said the punks, hopped the curb onto Western Avenue and headed for nearby Interstate 40. We figured we'd never see them again, says King. That was it. The week after John King smashed Dustin Camp's windshield, rumors started amongst Tecosa High students that there was going to be a fight at the IHOP on Friday, December 12th. I don't know what the first word was, but by the time I heard it, it was 40 times out of proportion, says Smith, Heather Smith, Camp's girlfriend. It starts. There's going to be a fight, and then it turns into World War III. At the trial, Camp himself was vague about what was supposed to happen. I heard that Friday there was going to be a fight up there. I didn't know who it was going to be between, he testified. Well, I knew one group was going to be the punks. I didn't know who the other group was going to be. Yet, every one of those people who have testified, yourself included, who did not know about this and did not know why it was going to happen, had no intention of fighting? Prosecutor Pat Murphy asked Camp. Every one of you show up on time, and every one of you ended up on that street involved, didn't you? Yes, Camp replied. At about 8 p.m. that Friday night, Camp and Tecosa Jr. and varsity football team tight end Rob Mansfield went to Oscar Escobar's house in Camp's Cadillac, Camp testified. He said they weren't drinking, though police later found an 18-pack of Bud Light with only a few beers left and a half-empty bottle of Crown Royal in his trunk. Camp said they were left over from the week before. At Oscar Escobar's, Camp and Mansfield met up with Elise Thompson. Thompson was a junior at Tecosa who would later graduate as valedictorian in 1999. She'd attended the same private school as Heather Smith, who called her just one of the sweetest people. I've never heard a lie or a mean thing come out of her mouth. Rob Mansfield was one of her best friends. At Escobar's, Camp and his friends drank some beers and played pool while the girls talked. Then the party moved to Tecosa alumnus Nathan Wynn's house, Thompson testified, where there was barely enough room to sit down. Besides all the Tecosa kids who had been at Escobar's, there was a group of alumni there who knew Wynn, Thompson said. Around 10 p.m., both Camp and Thompson's testimony agree that the group, now larger, then decided to move again. The guys were saying, well, it's about time, Elise Thompson said later in court. Let's go meet up at IHOP. Camp testified that about a dozen people left for IHOP, but Thompson testified she had arrived with Camp and 10 or 12 people from Escobar's party and met more at Wynn's. She believed nearly everybody who had been at Wynn's went to IHOP. Thompson caught a ride with Camp, sitting in the back seat of his Cadillac, and on arrival saw that the parking lot was so full, we ended up in the parking lot next door. It was all the people I knew, Thompson testified. She didn't see anyone who looked like a punk. Chris Olays didn't want to go to IHOP that night, even though that's where he went almost every night after finishing his job selling gravesites by phone for Memorial Park Cemetery. IHOP was a home away from home, he says. Even though the rumors of a fight were no different than the rumors they heard almost every week, he was nervous. Early in the week, Olays had told the IHOP manager he'd heard there might be trouble on Friday night. I had a bad feeling, he says. The whole way up, I was like, let's stay home. We had a right to go up if we wanted, but I was almost pleading with them. It was kind of weird. We always heard that shit, he says. It was like a once-a-week thing. We didn't think anything of it. But, just in case, he told his friends to meet him there. In the trunk of his car, he had a metal baseball bat, and at his side, he had the baton he says he always carried, in case he got jumped. Brian had the chain and lock he kept with himself, after being attacked several times, friends say. When they left for IHOP, some of the other punks had chains and combat boots. Basic clothing stuff, says Jackie Boulder as. But we're otherwise unarmed, she says. We weren't there looking for a fight, says Brian's brother, Jason Denneke. The punks had been hanging out, drinking. Some said only a few beers, some said all day. When Oles got home from work, Brian was a little drunk, says Balder as, but he could handle it. Brian's blood alcohol content would later test out at 0.19, nearly twice the legal limit. But Oles was sober when he, Brian, and Jason Denneke, Balder as, and Julie Holyfield left for IHOP in Holyfield's car. When they turned onto Western, they had to keep driving because the IHOP parking lot was full, with cars spilled over into adjacent streets, they said. This was about 3 hours before the usual 2 a.m. post-bar rush, and none of the punks had ever seen the IHOP so crowded. Right when we walked up to the front door, there was a mob of kids screaming and yelling at us, and telling us they were going to kick our ass, Oles says. He spotted his friend J.T. Clifton standing outside, and with Holyfield on one arm and Balder as on the other, he stepped inside to see if any other friends were there. Meanwhile, John King pulled up outside, with Jennifer Hicks and Christy Kanichuk. As soon as he shut off his car, a truck pulled up and blocked him in, he says, and a crowd surrounded the car, telling him to get the fuck out. I got out of my car and whipped out my baton, and the people backed off me some, he says. Oles found no familiar faces in the IHOP. He was on his way back outside when the manager, who was yelling at the crowd in the parking lot to go home, stopped him. He pointed across Western, into the plaza parking lot, and said, "Your friends are getting jumped." It looked like about 20 people fighting, and I thought, maybe our friends showed up, he says. But then I thought, we don't have that many friends. And I looked and realized they were beating on one person, Brian. The Denneke brothers had been separated from Oles and the girls soon after arriving at IHOP, and now Brian was curled up in a ball on the asphalt at the feet of six or seven guys, his brother says. Oles met King at his car, and King handed him the baseball bat. Oles, nervous, held it against his leg so it wouldn't be as obvious, he says. Elise Thompson had gone inside IHOP to meet some of her friends, and when she came out, she testified she saw two punks, one tall and wearing a brightly colored leather jacket, and one shorter, with short hair, waving bats and batons and screaming. She couldn't remember what the tall one said, but the short one, she testified, said, "I think we can take them." Mansfield called to her and said they were leaving, so she hurried back to Camp's car. King and Oles were running across Western as a red Chevy Blazer roared past, clipping King's leg. King smashed out the back window with his baton and hit several other cars as they passed, then ran with Balder as and Kanichuk to Brian. He was getting beat up by a shitload of guys, King says. We were beating people and just trying to get them off. King's baton connected heavily with Dacosta Jr. Justin DeVore's head, King says, splitting his scalp and knocking him into semi-consciousness. Brian stood up and shook himself off. He said, "I'm okay," King says. He didn't look too beat up, so we started to back away and find a way to get the fuck out. Camp's Cadillac was moving across Western towards the plaza with Elise Thompson in the back seat and Rob Mansfield up front. Thompson saw kids running toward the Western Plaza lot. Camp was silent, concentrating, he later said in court, as he threaded his Cadillac through clots of fighting people. Thompson testified that she saw people being beaten by a circle of punks. On the pavement was Dacosta Jr. and basketball player Andrew McCullough. "Oh my God, look what they're doing to Andrew," Thompson remembered Camp saying. Panicked, McCullough was one of Camp's close friends, she testified. "He seemed to snap," Thompson testified. Mansfield tried to get out of the car, but Camp wouldn't let him, Thompson said. Instead, he swerved towards Chris Oles, who Thompson said was on the edge of the group attacking McCullough. Oles says he had been loping alone towards Brian's attackers, bat still against his leg, when Camp's car came up behind him. "I didn't see the car, and I wasn't near anyone, and he got me," he says. "It all happened really fast. I remember being on the hood. I was on the car and off the car." Oles rolled off and hit the ground on his back hard enough to bounce the metal bat out of his hands. Dazed for a moment, he struggled to his feet, grabbed for the bat, and was hit in the leg by a beer bottle. Police later found beer bottles and cans of Bud Light scattered across the parking lot. "I thought, now I'm going to get killed," he says. "There were so many kids, I was trying to get towards a light pole or something because I thought the car was going to come back. Somebody threw a pool cue at him and he grabbed it off the ground and ran for a street light. Then he looked over and saw Brian. Oles says Brian was nowhere near anyone else. John King says he saw Oles get hit and then saw a car line up on Brian, whom he also says was alone. Inside Camp's Cadillac, the view wasn't quite the same. Thompson said Camp wasn't responding as Manfields kept repeating, "Stop! Let's go! Let's get out of here!" After hitting Oles, Camp testified he had reversed and headed back to Western, but swung the Cadillac around to make sure McCullough was up on his feet. That's when he spotted Brian Denneke. In court, Camp said he saw Brian hitting Justin DeVore with a club. Thompson agreed, testifying that Brian appeared to be attacking someone she couldn't recognize with a club or a stick. But Chris Oles saw Brian running from the car, he says. He saw Brian turn and strike the car with the chain he always carried. It looked like it really pissed off the driver when Brian hit the car. It seemed like he stepped on the gas, Oles says. It looked like a monster, like this metal monster coming after him. Thompson testified that Camp never swerved away or tried to slow down. She saw Brian turn and met his eyes just as the Cadillac caught him. Brian was looking at us when the car impacted him. His body came up on the hood and rolled underneath the car, she testified. I felt two bumps and I prayed it was the median that we were going over. And then I looked back, since I was in the back seat, and I saw him lying there. It was a pool of blood, and he just looked very befuddled, and then I saw a girl run to him, and then that's all I saw. Brian slid up and off the hood and under the front of the car as Oles watched. My first thought was to find the first person I don't know and take their head off, he said. But then he let the bat and the pool cue drop from his hands and ran to Brian. I knew he was dead automatically, he says. No one could live through that. Jennifer Hicks and Jason Denneke were already there as Jason cradled his brother in his arms. The crowd of high school kids cheered. It was the sickest thing, and you probably don't read about it, Oles says, but they cheered. Inside the car, there was silence. Mansfield stopped yelling, shocked dumb, Thompson said. Then, according to Thompson's testimony, Camp spoke. I'm a ninja in my caddy, he muttered softly. I bet he liked that one.